This is not as bad as it looks. I think I have discovered a new way to communicate with my wife. Maybe this will work better. I have just gotten a text from her that yes, it is at 11 a.m. On the 31st at the Akron Holiday Inn Express on Arlington Road in Akron. So mark that on your calendars. And we certainly wouldn't want to come here and discover that nobody else is here. So keep that in mind. I know you were just up and singing, but please take your hymnals. Don't rise. Take your hymnals and turn to hymn number 72. Hymn number 72. While you're doing that, I'm going to get myself a little drink. Hymn number 72 is the hymn that we sing. It's one of my favorites in the book, and I'm sure it's a lot of you, yours also. And it's, O how love I thy law. O how love I thy law. And we'll read the first verse. It says, O how love I thy law, it is ever with me. It is my meditation all the day in my thoughts. I have held back my feet from the ways of this world, and you have given me wisdom by thy righteous commands. By thy righteous commands. And that's all we'll read, because we're going to read where that was taken from. It was from the 119th Psalm. And the 119th Psalm is another one of my favorite chapters in the Bible. And if you have not read lately, or if you've never read the 119th chapter of Psalms, it's the longest chapter in the Bible. And I'm trying to remember, was it 172 or what were the 176 verses. But you can read the 119th chapter of Psalm in about 15 minutes. It's not that much time out of your life. And if you get a chance, read it. Now, you can read it in 15 minutes, but you can spend a day on it. You can spend a week on it. You can spend a year, or you could spend years on it, probably, with all that's in all those verses. All the many things that it has to say that can enhance our life. Our life. In chapter 119, in verse 97, and you know what I need to do. I forgot my regular timekeeping device, so I'll have to do this on the phone, and hopefully, there we go. But anyway, oh, how love I thy law, it is my meditation all the day long. You, through your commandments, he says in verse 98, make me wiser than my enemies. Now, wouldn't that be valuable information to have, to something that could make me wiser than my enemies, something that would make me better than those who are against me, the forces that seem like constantly are sort of chipping away at us. If we had information that could help us to be wiser than that, be a step ahead of them, that would be great. That would be something that would be worth incorporating into our life and would be worth learning and would be worth taking the time to learn, taking the time to find out about, taking the time to make a part of our internal way of life. And it says, it is my meditation all the day long. All the day. All day long is my meditation all the day. And at another place, the margin says, doesn't say it here, but in another place in Psalms, actually, the margin says that meditation or meditate is to ponder by talking to ourselves. Now, I know that meditation doesn't seem like something that's real important, maybe, or something that's maybe on our horizon or on our agenda or something that we do very often or very much. I had an uncle, speaking of meditation, I had an uncle who was a fisherman. And he used to tell me, he said, unless you can go out in your backyard, take your fishing line and hang it into a bathtub full of water for a whole afternoon, you can't be a fisherman. And I think meditating is a little bit like that. Unless you can sit and think of nothing for a half hour, at least this is what I've heard from people, if you can't sit and think of nothing for a half hour, you probably will have a struggle meditating. And I know I've tried it. I know it's a lot more difficult than you might think, or maybe you already know how difficult that is. It's not easy. It's not the kind of thing that we do every day, probably, but we do meditate even whether we realize it or not. But we should probably devote more time to meditation, just like David did here, and think about specified things, targeted things. Think about those things and get better at understanding them, and this certainly would be one of them. It says in verse 105, your word, and by the way, the 119th Psalm, let me just mention this, the 119th Psalm, all but maybe two verses in the whole Psalm talk about God's word, God's statutes, God's testimonies, God's laws, God's commandments in every verse except possibly two. And those may be, I haven't really checked, but those might be linked to another verse that does say something about it. But anyway, and they all really basically mean the law. They have specific meanings, more detailed a little bit, but a lot of it has to do with just the law. Your word, it says, is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Again, that's valuable information to have. I remember coming out of the bathroom one night in the middle of the night, and I kicked my toe on the bedpost so hard that my big toe, so hard that I lost the nail on it, and sure would have helped me if I'd have had a light lighting the path of my feet. I could have avoided that. It's a light and a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. That's valuable, especially when we're navigating around in a dangerous world such as we have nowadays. Because I just read again this morning, a little 7-year-old girl abducted, and they found her 2 days later. Some delivery guy had abducted her, and within probably an hour, I think he had killed her. Happens all the time. We had this four college students out in Moscow, Idaho. I don't think they've found anybody that has done that yet, or that. They think is a suspect. As far as I've read or know, they haven't. But in the middle of the night, somebody with a knife came in and stabbed four people to death. Now, I would, in my mind, I think that person would have to be a person that's skilled and trained in some kind of stealth tactics or hand combat or something. That's just my opinion. I don't know, but it would seem like it wouldn't be that easy to do. But at any rate, all the time we hear those kind of things. We hear about people blowing up things, people crashing into things on purpose, into groups of people, all kinds of things, bombs and whatnot. It would be nice to have a light and a lamp so we can know how to navigate around in this world. But again, that knowledge, according to this, is available to us, and we can use it. We can use it. But the question comes up, well, hasn't the law been done away? I don't think hardly anybody in this room would believe that, but there are a lot of people who do believe that, and that take that particular mindset into what they do. Matthew 5, Jesus Christ. This is on the Sermon on the Mount, which is the longest delivery of instructions for living life that Jesus Christ gave in one place, starts with the Beatitudes and goes all the way through into most of chapter 7. But in verse 17, Jesus Christ specifically, pointedly said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Now, some people think, well, he fulfilled them, so they're no longer necessary. But that's not the case, because he goes on in verse 18. "Assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle," that's like the stroke of a pen, a crossing of the T, dotting of an I, means the written law, not one jot or one tittle, "will by no means pass from the law till it's all done." And we were talking about that before services. A few of us were talking about, when's it all going to be done? When is it going to be over? Well, until that happens, the law will not be done away with. Now, I'll give you the title, and the title of the message, a little different, Two Pebbles, P-E-B-B-L-E-S, T-W-O-P-E-B-B-L-E-S. And there's a story behind that that I want to tell you, and then we'll go from there. The particular story is that there was an old merchant, an old man, and his daughter, and they had a store. Excuse me. They had a general mercantile store or some such thing. And in the course of time, there at one time when things were good, that particular store was very profitable and very well-to-do, and he was making good money, but he fell on hard times with the store. And as things would happen, as time went on, he had to borrow money. Unfortunately, the moneylender in that little village was an old man that was dishonest, greedy, lecherous, lustful, and you can go on and add names to it if you want to. So it wasn't under the optimum of circumstances that they were borrowing money. And he had to keep borrowing a little bit here and a little bit there and a little more there and a little bit more, till finally it got to the point where he could no longer hope to pay it back. He was to the point where that particular the moneylender had more leverage over him than he actually owned in assets. And I've been there, done that almost. I've had cars that I borrowed money on and ran them into the ground, and before I had it paid off, I owed more than it was worth. And that happens still today with a lot of people, and not so much anymore for me, but the older you get, I guess the little wiser maybe you get, or a little more frugal or whatever. I don't have to have the latest, greatest of everything, so I'm willing to sacrifice modernity and bells and whistles for what I can afford, a little bit more. And that's something that I've learned along the way, and I'm sure a lot of you have too. But at any rate, that's where he found himself. This man, as I said, he was a lecherous old man, and he was an ugly man in the sense that his personality and character were ugly. Doesn't say how he looked physically, but he was not a good person, not a nice person. So he comes along to collect, and he had his eyes and wanted to marry her. I don't know if he wanted to marry her, but he wanted her, his daughter, because she was beautiful, younger, very attractive, and he wanted her. So he made a proposal. He said, here is what we will do. I'm willing to do this. In exchange for your daughter, I will give up the debt. In fact, he said, I'll go one step further. I have this bag here. I will put a black and a white pebble in here, the two pebbles, a black and a white pebble. If your daughter pulls out the white pebble, your debt will be forgiven and she won't have to marry me. If she pulls out the black pebble, your debt will be forgiven, but she'll have to marry me. If she refuses to pull any pebbles out of this bag, you're going to jail until you can pay it. So those were the three options that they were faced with. And what I am going to do, I want to solve this problem through the lens of what we read in Deuteronomy, through the lens of God's law, through the lens of the law of God. And remember, we were told in Deuteronomy that the law will make us wiser than our enemies, and on the other hand, it'll also cast a light on our path and a lamp to our feet, that we'll be able to see where we're going and what we're doing and how to get around things by the law. That's what we were told. So we want to, through the law, we want to navigate this particular problem and see if it helps. See if it helps. Now we're going to go, when I say the law, we're going to go beyond the Ten Commandments. And when I say beyond the Ten Commandments, I don't mean some higher law or something better. I'm just saying we're going past them to some of the lesser known laws that we could possibly run into in the Bible. To do that, I want to have Paul help us with the law a little bit. In 1 Corinthians 9, and in verse 8, 1 Corinthians 9, I guess it helps if I go to 1 Corinthians and not Romans. 1 Corinthians 9, and in beginning in verse 8. Here Paul, in this section, he is making the case for himself. He says that I should be able to live off the gospel. I should be able to be paid off of the gospel. And he makes the case for it. Let's read verse 7. Whoever goes to war at his own expense, it's a question. Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit, or who tends a flock and does not drink the milk of the flock? Who doesn't get to enjoy the fruits of their labors? Who doesn't get a chance to partake of what they're doing, the work that they're doing? For, he says, do I say these things in verse 8 as a mere man? Is this just something I dreamed out of my own memory or my own mind or by myself? Or does not the law say the same thing? Now, I don't remember reading that in the law. And I don't know if any of you do or not, if you remember reading that in the law, that, hey, if you do the gospel, then you should get a paycheck for it. Freely we have received, so freely we give, right? But he goes on to make the case here, and what does he do? He pulls one of those obscure laws out of the Old Testament. You shall not muzzle is what he quotes. The law, it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. Very small, simple little statement. But he asks, and we could have thought, well, yeah, maybe. Is it oxen God is concerned about, or does he say it altogether for our sakes? Is he saying this just about oxen to protect animals, or is this for us? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partakers of his hope. So what he did, he took a law that most people would have said, well, how many of you have an ox? I don't. And, or how many of you have even a horse that you would go into the grain fields with? We have people in our area here. We are in an area that has people who still farm with horses and so on. They do have animals, draft animals that they use, but that's actually sort of rare. Most of it, when you go and watch harvesting, most of it is with million-dollar pieces of equipment that maybe do a half acre wide at a time going down, a 500-acre field. That's how most harvesting is done these days. But not in this day. But is that obsolete just because we don't have animals? Not according to Paul. Not what he said. He said, you shall not muzzle the ox that treads, that treads or threshes the grain. It's found in Deuteronomy, the 25th chapter, verse 4. And we're going to spend a little bit of time in Deuteronomy as well as back to Psalms a little bit here and there. And this is just what Paul quoted right here. So Paul is saying that there is an application for those old, obscure, long since obsolete laws. Whether we have an ox or whether we don't have an ox, he says, there's an application for this. Well, we're going to do something here. This daughter, we're going to take her and we're going to transform her. We're going to make her a God-fearer. Now, I don't know if she was or if she wasn't. There's no indication one way or the other whether she was or wasn't a God-fearing person, but we're in our application of it. We can sort of mold her into whatever image we want to because it's our story, right? We can sort of manipulate her to be that. Because I don't know that it's, I'm assuming it's just a parable, that it's not a real true story. But at any rate, so we're going to make her a God-fearing person for this purpose. And for that, the first thing, we're in Deuteronomy. So we'll go back to the 22nd chapter of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 22, just a couple pages back. And let me mention, there are more laws listed in the book of Deuteronomy than any other book in the entire Bible. It has more laws, and it's also like the 119th chapter of Psalms, it's also worthy of some of our study. In fact, the whole first five books of the Bible, which is the Torah, or which means law, the whole first five books of the Bible are worthy of our attention and of our study and reading. Sometimes you might want to get a more modern version. The New King James, which I'm using, is pretty good. It modernizes things. Probably NIV and some other translations might even be a little bit more easier to read and understand, but nonetheless, unless you're going to, so-and-so begot whoever, Isaac begot Jacob and Jacob or whatever, so on down the line. Some of the names that you can't really pronounce, when you get into those, it gets tedious in almost any translation. It gets a little tedious. But Jesus Christ said that every word of God is worth our study. We shall live by every word of God, and if we've never read every word of God, then obviously how can we live by it? Because we don't know, because we've never done it. But at any rate, as we're talking here, we find right in here between, well, there are three verses here that sort of mean the same thing. They're all of a similar vein. One of them's pretty controversial because I don't know that anybody has come up with the definitive answer to that. But in verse 9, and the only reason I'm even mentioning this, it says, "You shall not sow your vineyard with different kinds of seed." And I can just tell you that I've had a personal experience with that. I planted some three vine, whatever you call them, that when you plant them, the three vines into the ground, grape vines into the ground, about, I would say, 12 to 15 feet apart where I live. And then in front of that, I planted two peach trees and two apple trees. Now, these were dwarf trees. And, you know, you can let them do whatever you want. You can trim them back to nothing, or you can keep them, let them grow a little bit. And I wanted to let mine grow a little bit because I didn't think I could get very many apples from a 3-foot tree. So I let them grow probably 6-8 feet. Well, they grew in front of that grape arbor that I had, and guess what happened? They blocked out the sun, and my grapes could not grow and develop. I never got hardly any grapes because grapes need sun. They need a nice amount of sun, as a matter of fact, for them to really produce. So eventually, I ended up cutting one apple tree and both peach trees. They were marginally productive anyway, so I cut them. Why cumbers at the ground, I think, is the word that we find in the Bible. But anyway, I cut them down, and sure enough, the sun started hitting my vineyard there, and the grapes started to grow. The last few years, I've had some really nice grapes, as a matter of fact. Made grape juice, haven't made any wine yet, but I may someday. Haven't gotten that far around to that. But it's just a personal little thing that if I had heeded this, it would have saved me some aggravation. It would have saved me, excuse me, from not being able to harvest anything from them. But then in verse 10, and this is what we want to look at. "You shall not plow with an ox and a jackass together." A donkey, which is what a jackass is, a donkey. Together. Now, when you think about this, well, we'll think about it a little further. We don't really know exactly what that means just from looking at it. Yeah, it makes sense. If you do an ox and a donkey together, you know, the ox is it actually is pound for pound the strongest animal, draft animal on the farm. Now, draft horses are a lot bigger and heavier. Overall, they can pull more, but pound for pound, they're not as powerful as an ox is. A donkey is pretty puny, pretty small compared to that ox. So what you'll have is busted equipment if you do that much, or maybe ruined animals or animals that are damaged, animals that are injured. They can become injured from doing that. We used to have, draft horses, and then we'd have some buggy horses that we'd fill in with sometimes when we were working the ground, and you have to have, they call them eveners. You put single trees on a big, long piece of wood or steel or whatever, and you space them according to the draft power that you have. And that's how you mitigate it somewhat. But a donkey and an ox would not work. But what meaning does that have for our puzzle here? Again, Paul to the rescue. Paul in 2 Corinthians 6 and in verse 14, and we would have a harder time, and this is why maybe our friends who don't believe in the New Testament may have a little more difficulty in understanding some of these things, because some things are clarified by what we read in the New Testament. In verse 14 of 2 Corinthians 6, Paul said, "Do not be unequally yoked." It's a direct reference back to that, the ox and the jackass. Now, I'll let you guess which one was the ox and which one was the jackass in this analogy we're making here of the moneylender and the merchant's daughter. But at any rate, don't do it, it says. "For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness?" Now, this can be taken in more ways than just in a religious sense. It also can be taken in a secular sense, in people being married unequally. We've long thought that and long used it for that purpose. Now, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, or do not be unequally yoked with people that we're not compatible with. And makes perfect sense for this girl. She knew that this would not make sense for her. Not only was she not attracted to this person, she was repulsed by this person. And on top of that, they had nothing in common. She was young, he was old. He had no character, and she had character. So why would she want to be married to this person? It's a case where she could see and where she could determine that this is not going to work. This is not right. I shouldn't be doing this. So right away, even on just a material level, this was not good. This was not going to work for her or anybody else, for that matter. Wouldn't work for the man even in the long term. But obviously, he didn't care. That was the first thing. Then the second thing we find in Deuteronomy, the 25th chapter, which we were close, but we'll go back to Deuteronomy 25. We were in Deuteronomy 25, where it said, "You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain." But here we're going to go to verse 13. Now let me just tell you a little bit more information about this man. Part of the reason that they couldn't pay their debt is because this man was a greedy cheater. He would cheat him out of things and make them believe that they owed it. He was very treacherous. He did things to make that grow, and he had a purpose in mind. But here it says in verse 13, "You shall not have in your bag differing weights, a heavy and a light. You shall not have in your house differing measures, a small, large and a small. You shall have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. For all who do such things, all who behave unrighteously, are an abomination to the Lord." She could see that this was not a good person. This was not a man of good character. This was not a man that she would want to be associated with and go through life with, because she knew that at some time he'd have to pay the piper, that this man was not only treacherous, but he had ugly character. He had no character. His character was all bad. He was a cheater, and he could not be trusted. If you can't trust a person, you can't be with him. What does Proverbs say? It's like a foot out of joint. You depend on it, and boom, down you go, because you just can't put any weight on it. When you need it the most, it's not there for you. And that's what this fellow would have had to do. Excuse me. She had to watch him carefully, and she knew that. So if he was going to put pebbles in her bag, she was going to have to pay attention. She was sharp. She was bright. She was young. She had good eyes, which as you get older, for those of you who are young, let me just inform you that your eyes may not be as good down the line as they are today. Maybe they will be. Hopefully they will be. But they may not be. The older you get, Ecclesiastes said, before you can look through that window dimly, things become dim as you get older. And that's not her position, though. She was young, had great eyes, so she could look and see what was going on. So they were standing on a gravel path with a bunch of pebbles. So he reached down and picked up two pebbles, and she noticed, and here was a fatal mistake he made. She noticed that he picked up two black pebbles and put them in the bag. He put in two black pebbles. She knew to watch him because she knew that the law had said, this guy's a cheater. He cheated him before, and he would have different weights. He would do things unethically. He would have a weight. I remember Norman Rockwell. You might remember some of his picture. I remember I had a painting of his. I didn't have a painting of it. I had a card or something with a painting on it. And an old lady had gone to the butcher to buy a chicken. And the scale was up here. The butcher was here, and she was here. Well, she had her thumb on the scale pushing up and looking up there, and he had his scale on the thumb, or his thumb on the scale looking down. This is what this fellow would do. He'd have two measures. He'd have one that looked like it was the right weight, but it wasn't. It was a light weight, or it was a heavy weight, or whatever. It depends on which way they were bartering or going. And that's what he did, and she knew that, and she knew that because she knew the law. She knew that the law was warning her about this. These laws still have application. They can have application for you and I, and they will if we pay attention. Luke, the 16th chapter, adds a little bit to this. Luke 16. The physician Luke is writing here, Luke 16, what we want to look at is verse 10, but given a lead up to that, it is a story about a parable that Jesus did and about stewardship and so forth, and about, see if it says here in the heading of my Bible here. The unjust steward, that's what I thought it was. But anyway, in verse 10, it comes down to verse 10, and it said, he who is faithful in what is least, in other words, he who is faithful in a little bit is also faithful in what is much. He who is unjust in a little is also unjust in much. And she knew this about this man. She knew that this man was unfaithful, that this man was not a scrupulous person, that this man could not be trusted, that this man was not going to do her right, as the saying is. He was going to take advantage of her and her father because he had backed him into a corner, into a position that they had to do sort of what he said. So he was going to take advantage, but she knew this. She knew this because that's what the law had said, and she knew the law. So she knew what to watch for and what to look for and how she could be ready for his shenanigans and his connivory. The third point, or the third law that we can look at, is in Deuteronomy, the 18th chapter. There are many laws. If you go all through this, by the way, the one in the last example we gave of being there in I mentioned the vineyard, but I didn't mention in verse 11, where that's the controversial one. You shall not wear a linen and a wool mixed garment. And there's a lot of controversy, or quite a bit of controversy, on exactly what that means. In fact, and I just recently discovered this, there is a company in Brooklyn, New York, that their job is to remove linen or any foreign material from wool suits. I have no idea how that works. Seemed like you'd end up with something like a screen door if you took all those extra threads out, but that's their job. That's what they do. I don't know how they do it, or what they, how that works. If you get it, maybe you get them a size bigger and then pull them all tight and it tightens up again or something, but that's what they do. They will make sure that they're, I'm assuming they're a Jewish company, because I would think their clients would pretty much all have to be Orthodox or Hasidic Jews or something like that. But here we find something in chapter 18, if I get over here, and in verse 13. It's talking about them coming into the land and to not follow the example of those who were in the land before them. Because God said, the reason God said that I'm replacing them is because of they have gotten so degenerate that I am kicking them out and bringing you in, which he knew that was going to happen. But that was why. It wasn't just that he came in and displaced them just arbitrarily. They were so bad that they no longer were fit to stay in the land. But in verse 13, it says you are not supposed to be that way. You're not supposed to follow those things. And you have to think about this a little bit. It says you shall be blameless before the Lord your God in verse 13. Verse 14 is the key here. It said, for these nations which you will dispossess, listen to soothsayers and diviners, but as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. Now, how is this relevant here? I had gotten a book, actually, credit where credit is due. John Miller had given me a book. It was called The Rational Bible by Dennis Prager. And I forget which one he gave me. It might have been Exodus. But he has Genesis and Exodus. And now he just came out with Deuteronomy, which I've been looking for quite a while, and I just found out he got it. So I went out and got it, and I looked this up in the Rational Bible. And what it is, the Rational Bible, it's the Jewish Publication Society, I think, is the translation. But he will put down a verse, and then he does a commentary on it. So I looked at this. And this is what he said. Here's the verse. It says, those nations that you're about to dispossess do indeed resort to soothsayers and augurs. I'm not sure exactly. I could have and should have looked it up, but I don't know what an augur is. It's A-U-G-U-R-S. I do know what it means, but I'd never seen it in that context. To you, however, the Lord your God has not assigned the like. Here's what he says about it. And I don't know, a lot of you probably know who Dennis Prager is. Some of you may or may not. He has commentary online. He has Prager U, I think it is what he calls it. And he has a lot of different commentators on his particular network and so on. But here's his commentary. The Torah, and the Torah just means law, it's the first five books of the Bible, insists human have and must regard themselves as having moral free will. That's what this is about, this particular verse, moral free will. It says, any practice that undermines this view of the human being is unacceptable. If we could divine the future from tarot cards or the entrails of animals or from consulting ghosts, it would mean that the future, and get this, is fixed And it really would. It would mean that it's predestinated. It would mean that we can't do anything about it. It's already done and over with and accomplished, so we have no choice in the matter. But we have free will, and that's what he's saying here. It would mean the future is fixed, and humans, therefore, would not have free will. And it made a lot of sense, because what diviner means here in verse 14, it means lottery. And that's what in the bag, that's what she was getting. She would be giving up her free will to a lottery of happenstance, which this is what it says here that the nations do. And that's what, if you look it up and you do a little digging, you'll find out that that's part of what diviners means. It means doing things by the lot, which is what a short way of saying lottery. And not that the lot is always bad, because God, they used it for Stephen and Philip's ordination after they had chosen, what was it, 7 men of high character, and they put them in a pool, and they had cast lots for them. But that was God ordained. This is demonic sorcery, witchcraft, wickedness, and so on. She knew this too, because she knew what this verse says. She knew, she understood, because she thought about it. She meditated. She studied the law. Now, we're assigning this to her because we have decided she's a God-fearer. But this particular person would have done, a God-fearing person does that. That's what they do. That's what we do. We study these things, and that's why, and that's how the law can make us wiser than our enemies, by knowing these things. And that's why she was not willing to just willy-nilly do this. This was one other way in which she was able to overcome this. Let's go back to the 119th Psalm. Well, first of all, before we do that, let's go to 1 John 5, 19 and 20. We don't give up our free will to others. Now, sometimes we have no choice in what we do. This is true. But those cases, in our most of our cases now, we have not begun to strive yet unto blood, which some people did at some points. 1 John 5 and in verse 19, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. We're of God. The world lies under the sway or the influence of the wicked one, the spirit in that spirit in high places that is evil. In verse 20, we know that the Son of God has come and has given us an understanding that we may know him who is true, and we are in him who is true, in his Son Jesus Christ. This is the true and eternal life. We are of God. We are not somebody else's. We are not as back there. We are to be blameless. We're not to give ourselves, and she knew that we're not to give ourselves over to chance. That's part of the reason that we do not, as a general rule, I'm not saying we never do that, or that I haven't even done that, buy a lottery ticket, you know, or something, or gamble, but it is destructive when we get too far into it. Even the lottery itself, which always surprises me, they have a disclaimer when you buy things. Are you addicted? You know, do you spend too much on gambling? It's the same way with cigarettes. They put a disclaimer on there, a warning. This is not good for you, but here, have some. And that's basically the way it is. But here, what John is saying, we're not to give ourselves over to others to determine for us what's going to happen. And she knew that. She was smart enough and sharp enough to know that she should not be taking place or doing this, and she did not on her own free will, but what can she do? Her dad's going to jail. She's going to marry this guy. Or the third option, which is about a 30% chance, she could maybe pick the white pebble. But now, even that has been taken away because the guy put two black pebbles in the bag. Now she has no chance of picking. She doesn't even have that 50-50 chance of reaching down there and picking the black pebble. Here she is standing on the gravel path, pondering all this. It's coming at her fast. It comes at us fast when we're faced with things. Most of the time, it comes at us in very dramatic and very fast, very furious. It happens all the time. So we better be ready for it, and the way we're ready for it is if we internalize it, if that's who we are and not just what we do. We have to be we have to be those things. We have to be what God wants us to be. That has to be us and not just things that we do. I used to have there was a song, I'm trying to remember what it was called, A Beautiful Life, I think. And it says, each day I'll do a golden deed. Well, why should I do a golden deed each day? You should just be doing golden deeds your whole life, all the time, every day, 24/7. It's a good song, but I think it misses the point a little bit. At any rate, she knew this. She was not, she was pretty sharp. She was pretty bright. She was not one to fall into those traps. But let's go back to 119th Psalm, as I started to say a minute ago. And we'll just pick out a few other things. The 119th Psalm, the first verse we'll look at is 142. 142 says, your law is truth. Your law is truth. It says, your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness, and your law is truth. Now, we'll pause there for a second just to say this. Because it's truth, it is automatically forever, because truth cannot change. Truth cannot change. Truth is always truth. If something was true yesterday, whatever you want to choose, if it was true yesterday, then it's true today, and it's true forever. These types of things are true forever. They never can change, and they won't change. Verse 144. The righteousness of your testimonies is everlasting. Truth and also God's law is everlasting. It'll never change. Now, there are laws that are dormant. For example, some sacrificial laws. An example would be, let's say we're out here on 77 and the speed limit's 65. An earthquake comes along and shuts it down. Does that change the 65 mile an hour speed limit? No, it doesn't. The speed limit will still be the same if they get the road opened again. Now, I say it'll be the same. Theoretically, it'll be the same unless they decide different, but God's not like that. God is the same today, yesterday, and forever. So, your testimonies are everlasting, the righteousness of your testimonies. Then let's go to 151, which is just at the next column. It says 151, you are near, O Lord, and all your commandments are truth. He repeats the same thing. All your commandments are truth, and they're not going to change. This truth will not change. Concerning your testimonies, 152, I have known of old that you have founded them forever. They're forever. The laws, the fact that the Sabbath was made at the creation should give us an indication that probably all the commandments were back from the creation. Because we can read, it doesn't say that the Sabbath was made there, but when we get to the Ten Commandments, it points back and tells us that the Sabbath was made at the creation. And the Sabbath was made for man, it says. Not there, it says that in Mark, and I think Matthew and Luke both also. But at any rate, they are your testimonies. You have founded them forever. And verse 160, dropping on down to 160, the entirety of your word is truth. All of your word is truth. Every one of your righteous judgments endures forever. These are not temporary laws, like I mentioned with the example of the speed limit. Some laws may be dormant, there may not be an application for it. There's no temple to sacrifice at, so there's no sacrifice. There's some indications that there may be sacrifices at some point in the future again, and guess what? The same laws that governed them then will govern them again the next time they're used. True and everlasting, they always have been and always will be. The law, in some ways, is almost as much revelatory as it is regulatory. It's to reveal the way things are. And these are good examples of it, that the laws that we looked at in Deuteronomy, they're laws that have been there for a long time, and we think they're maybe not to use. But if you go back through there, when you're reading this or when you're reading any law, ask why. What do they mean for me, or what do they mean for us today? What good are those to me? How can those make me a better person, and how can I be wiser than my enemies by knowing this law? How can I do it? She did. She knew better than, for example, to be unequally yoked with this fellow. She knew better than to be tied to a cheater that was untrustworthy. That's never going to work for her. It's never going to work for us either, as a matter of fact. And number three, she knew better than to give up the free will, her free will, to chance, as we shouldn't either. We shouldn't either. Because the law made her wiser because she thought about it. She meditated about it. She took the time to study it, took the time to internalize it, took the time to practice the law. Now I know you're asking, well, what happened with the two pebbles in the bag? Well, I'll tell you what happened. She was standing on this pebble-strewn walkway. So what do you think in your mind, what might you have done? She reached in the bag and she got a pebble, and when she brought it out, she never looked at it. She just fumbled it down into the other pebbles. And she said, oh, I'm sorry for my clumsiness, but she said, it won't matter, because if you reach in and pick out the one that's left, you'll see which one I pulled out. And that's how she avoided the problem. That's how she was able to overcome this without having to marry him and having the debt forgiven, because what could he say? He said, oh, I'm a cheat and a liar and a louse, and I put two black pellets. No, he couldn't say that. So he was caught in his own, as it says in Proverbs or Ecclesiastes, those who dig a pit will fall into it, and he did. We'll close with one last scripture from the first Psalm. Psalm 1. Psalm 1 says, and this girl would have been the recipient of what it says here. It says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. His delight, or her delight, is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. Blessed is the person who does this. She was blessed for what she did. And we will be too.